Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring 5 doctors of audiology, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Contact tracing has been around since at least the early 20th century. It remains one of healthcare's most critical infectious disease responses. In part one of WGLT's week-long series on contact tracing during the pandemic, McLean County Health Department Communicable Disease Supervisor Melissa Graven tells Eric Stock tracing who infected people have been around is more critical during COVID-19 because hardly anyone is immune.
Traditionally, when we're doing contact tracings, it's with diseases we very much know the disease processes. We know lots about them. We do it a lot with STDs, gonorrhea, chlamydia. The community may remember when we've had mumps outbreaks. Contact tracing was something we did a lot with mumps outbreaks as well. But the difference is we had a lot less susceptible people because we've got a vaccine. So we really were only trying to identify those susceptible people to get them to quarantine, as opposed to nobody has immunity and everybody's at risk if exposed.
And does that impact how you train contact tracers to do this job? Because, as you said, we are learning as we go.
Absolutely. You know, in the beginning of this, we were learning about it in real time with everybody else in the communities looking to us for the answers, and we're trying to figure out those very same answers. And so we would put out a plan. This is what we're going to tell people. This is the education we need to provide. And then the next day, there's a little bit of a change, and it was forcing us to really be on the ball and be in constant contact with CDC and IDPH. And even amongst each other, we were meeting sometimes twice a day, 3 times a day, because information was changing so quickly.
And what does the training for contact tracing entail? How do you train them to be trustworthy, but also persistent? Because it seems like they need to be sometimes to be able to get the person on the other end to engage.
It's hard to train. I think it's an intrinsic thing somebody has. When IDPH was kind of putting the call out there, they said the really only good qualification for a contact tracer is somebody charismatic and engaging. And it's really true. The information will come. You will learn all the information you need to know about COVID. But the real skill is that immediately building trust with somebody, and asking them very personal questions about their lives and people that this day and age, we're just not used to sharing personal information and don't want to, so that makes it very difficult. We've had years of doing that. So to train a public on how to do that, who are amazing and people wanting to help, that's probably the hardest thing to train on.
I guess the other part of the problem is you have to get them to answer the phone first. What kind of success rate have you had in getting people to answer if it comes up as a contact tracer or maybe an unknown on their ID when people don't answer the phone unless they know exactly who's on the other end?
I think that's interestingly a trend I've seen just as a nurse in my 15 years. Nobody answers their phone anymore. They want a voicemail or a text message. They'll always respond to a text message or voicemail. Now, the callback is the problem. We have seen the callback rate kind of drop down with COVID when they hear it's the health department calling. That's always been kind of a struggle, but I think particularly now when they know what's on the other end of that call or think they know what's on the other end of that call, they may not want to call back.
That's Melissa Graven from the McLean County Health Department with Eric Stock. Hear the rest of this interview and series all this week on Sound Ideas at 5 o'clock.
You're listening to Sound Ideas on WGLT, and we're taking a quick break to talk about Fall Fun Drive. I'm R.C. McBride, joined by Melissa Leibert to talk about why now is the time to help your public radio station. Contribute at WGLT.org. It only takes about 60 seconds to get it done, and think about how good you will feel afterwards.
We've all been challenged in different ways over the past several months. Disruptions to our daily schedules, routines, employment, and health. And through it all, our team has remained here for you, focused and working tirelessly to keep the news, information, music, and entertainment coming your way. And you might be consuming the news a little differently right now. Maybe you're not listening at work and you're not driving as much. Instead, you're streaming from home. Do you find yourself catching up on local news on our website or the podcast? Perhaps you're a super user and it's all of the above.
However you're doing it, you're connecting with your community, with news, conversations, entertainment, that's all enriching. This is an essential public service, and it takes the work of many to get the news delivered in whichever way you choose to consume it. Be part of the team that makes it happen. Contribute now at WGLT.org.
WGLT has a long record of award-winning quality journalism, and I'm sure that's why you're tuning in right now. This year alone, WGLT was honored with 8 AP awards, including first place honors for outstanding news operation. And WGLT captured 3 highly coveted and very competitive Edward R. Murrow Regional Awards. This level of journalistic excellence doesn't just happen. It requires rigorous investigation, strategic hiring, expanded training, mentorship, and a commitment to seeking truth, as well, of course, as appropriate equipment and technology to get it all done and bring that news to you.
WGLT cannot continue to bring you this level of coverage and quality without your support. So contribute today and show your commitment to this essential community service you rely on, especially now when live, local, and trusted news is so, so critical. Go to WGLT.org right now and make that critical investment. And thank you.
This is Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's Public Media.
Welcome to WGLT Election 2020 coverage. Throughout the campaign season, we're conducting interviews and forums with the candidates in different races. Today, we talk to the Democratic candidate running for McLean County Board District 6, Anna Beer. District 6 is an area which serves parts of Uptown Normal, parts of Illinois State University, as well. Beer's opponent, Libertarian David Scarpelli, declined WGLT's request to participate. Videos of these interviews will be available online as well. Candidates get 2 minutes for an opening statement. So Hannah, the floor is yours for your opening statement.
Hi there. So first off, I'd like to thank WGLT for giving me the opportunity to share a little bit about myself, and thank you for the listeners for participating and being engaged this season. My name is Hannah Beer. I am running for McLean County Board District 6. I'm finishing up my final year here at Illinois State University, and I'm running for the board because I want to continue serving my community that has given me so much during my time at the university. As a college student, I know that I can provide a better representation for our Redbird community. The folks here at ISU make up a large portion of our population, and we bring in a significant amount of revenue for the county. We not only learn here, but we live here. We work, eat, shop, and have our whole entire lives here for most of the year. But yet we don't have an elected official at the local level for the district. So I hope to be that voice.
So our first question is one of government philosophy. How much of a role should government play in our lives, particularly at the local and county level? And what experiences have you had that have helped form your philosophy on that?
So what I've learned about government, I've learned a lot from ISU. I studied political science there. And I believe that, especially at the local level, it's our job to responsibly use our taxpayers' dollars to provide for our community. We have baseline services that we need to provide to our community members, such as the county roads, making sure those are in good condition, especially with the pandemic going on, public health, making sure that that is funded and that we are getting the best resources that we can with these uncertain times, making sure we have free and open elections, just kind of making sure that our people and our communities are able to flourish with a guiding hand.
And since you touched on the pandemic, let's go to that. Of course, the coronavirus pandemic has overshadowed much of what the county has had to do in recent months. And being on the ISU campus, you are sort of at the center of that here in McLean County. So how well has the county done in your view, meaning the elected board, administration, and the health department, to try to keep the public informed and safe during this pandemic? Anything that you can say they have done well or anything you feel they could do better?
I think that with this pandemic, it's changing. It seems like every day it changes. We don't really know what to expect. We've kind of gotten to a point now where we kind of have returned to our normal lives, but there's still a lot of questions that people have. The end isn't really anywhere near. So I think in these unprecedented times, we need to really rely on our local leadership within the county to make sure that they are making the best decisions possible and doing as much as they possibly can. I think the county has handled it fairly well, given that we don't really have an idea of what is going on because it changes so often. But I think that with the students coming back, that was a major disappointment to see that we shot up again. I think that that could have been prepared for a little bit better. I don't know what those preparedness would have been, but I think having the students return, it's a hard thing because you don't want people to not experience school and going to getting all these great opportunities that McLean County has to offer and ISU does. But then again, public safety is, it's a question. And I think we've done okay. And I hope that we don't have another spike in the future.
And this is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. You're listening to WGLT's election coverage and a candidate profile on McLean County Board District 6. Democratic candidate Hannah Beer. She is running against Libertarian David Scarpelli. County Board District 6 is an area that serves part of the ISU campus and Uptown Normal, as we had alluded to. Not big geographically, but certainly a lot of people live there, particularly on campus. So what issues specific to residents of the district, perhaps what you may be hearing from residents, are of concern to them that you would like to address on the county board?
Well, one of the biggest things that I've personally witnessed comes with elections. We on campus for the last few years, and I know this year is going to be a lot different because of the pandemic, but there's always been issues around voting and not having students' voices being heard with weird hours and a limited early voting opportunities and then really long lines on election day. That's one thing that I really, really want to focus on and making sure that when it comes to elections, that our Redbirds can have their voices heard in effective and efficient ways rather than waiting in lines.
And McLean County government has been operating under an emergency order since March because of the pandemic. Nearly all of its public meetings have been online only ever since. The new county board will decide when to go back to meeting in person. So what health metrics or other factors will guide your thoughts on when the county should resume meeting in person again?
I think it's really going to depend on what the situation looks like when we do get to that point. If we are able to be together and social distance or, you know, whatever the case may be when that time comes, with advice from our public health leaders, like when they decide what is safe, I'm all for that. But I do think that regardless if we meet in person or we continue to do it virtually, these county board meetings need to be streamed live like they have been, because I've seen so many people get involved and be able to keep up with what's going on at the county level more so than they would have beforehand. So I hope that continues.
And the McLean County Nursing Home in Normal has lost about $5 million since 2017. Its primary service is to provide care for families on Medicare and Medicaid. The county recently hired a new administrator to implement more reforms and cost-saving measures. So what is an acceptable cost for the county to keep the nursing home in its current form? And at what point should the county consider other options?
I don't have a specific number. I'm not very up to date on the specific costs of everything, but I do think that we need to keep the nursing home open as a county funded option for folks, because sometimes that is the only option for care with an aging population. And that is something that we need to provide to our residents, because no matter what age or circumstance or ability, those people are still our residents and we need to take care of them. Whatever that cost is, as long as those people are getting proper care, I am fully supportive of it.
And this is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. As we continue with our election coverage and a profile of McLean County Board District 6 candidate Hannah Beer, as we now move to our closing statement from candidate Hannah Beer, you have 90 seconds.
Again, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. I'm very glad to have been here. My closing remarks, I would just say to people, please stay engaged, be safe, make sure you're wearing your mask if you're going to be out in public. Please go vote. Your voice is so important this year. Please, if you feel so inclined to vote for me, I would really very much appreciate it. Again, my name is Hannah Beer. I'm running for McLean County Board District 6, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Our thanks to Hannah Beer. You've been listening to WGLT Election 2020 coverage of the race for McLean County Board District 6. Beer is running against Libertarian candidate David Scarpelli. You can hear all of our election coverage at WGLT.org or online at WGLT's YouTube channel. I'm Eric Stock.
As a public radio fan, you already know there's no subscription fee to listen to or read our stories. Everyone can access this essential public service thanks to community support. It's the Fall Fund Drive, and we're asking everyone to help pay for this essential service with a gift in any amount at wcbu.org or wglt.org. Keep us on the beat and keep the news coming. Chip in whatever you can afford with a contribution now at wglt.org. This is Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's Public Media. School nurses already had a full plate, helping meet the physical, health, and social-emotional learning needs of their kids, and that was before COVID hit. Now, as schools reopen their doors, school nurses have an even tougher job. Nobody is better at it than Unit 5's Susie Markham, who was just the Illinois Association of School Nurses Nurse of the Year. Ryan Denham speaks with Markham about her job and what parents can expect when schools reopen.
I was extremely honored and very humbled. There are over 900 members of the Illinois Association of School Nurses in Illinois. And it was just, it was very, very humbling and very, it felt really great, you know, to be honored like that.
Well, something we should talk about is what exactly school nurses do in this day and age. How do you think your actual job and that of your peers differs from kind of the public perception of what that job entails?
Such a great question. So, you know, the role of school nursing has actually changed so much, right? I mean, like, it's not just putting on Band-Aids, which is oftentimes the public perception. School nurses are the bridge that connect healthcare and education because, you know, everyone knows that healthy students learn better. So that's kind of the science part. But when you think about the other part of nursing, the art of nursing, in nursing in general, not just school nursing, but certainly including school nursing, you know, it really speaks to the fact that we value and care about every single person who enters our office. It's our job to empower. It's our job to listen and to care. And, you know, in recent times with COVID-19 and all other times, sometimes that social emotional piece is the most important for our students. You know, kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so when we're trying to come alongside of a student that has a chronic illness and maybe help them to care for their illness on their own, which will be their lifelong job, you know, they're not open sometimes to learning and to teaching until they know that we really care and that we have their best interest at heart. So it's super important for nurses, for school nurses especially, to come alongside of students and do that. And there's no other job like school nursing to have that long-term relationship with students and so that we can do that. So it's an awesome, awesome job.
So we are all about to send our kids back to school in person in Unit 5. I have a daughter who's a second grader. You know, it's going to be a few days a week starting October 19th. Going to be a lot of new procedures for parents to be thinking about. I wonder if you can kind of help us understand what are the most important ones of all these new things we're going to be up against?
Absolutely. You know, and I think it's important to say right away that, you know, all schools, even the schools that are already open, those of us that are getting ready to open, we truly just want to partner with parents, right? We want to partner with parents to make this new step one that is based on safety, safety for staff, safety for students, safety for everyone. And so we are following the Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines, which are based on CDC guidelines. But, you know, obviously those guidelines are being put in place so that schools and districts can keep everyone safe and healthy. So things are going to look different though. And I think that's super important for parents to understand. And again, this is not Unit 5 saying this needs to happen or any other district. This is a direct mandate from the Illinois Department of Public Health. Schools are being required to require of parents that there is a daily certification process for your student. So we're going to ask parents in Unit 5, it may look different in different buildings in different districts. In Unit 5, we are going to push out an app to parents called App Armor. And it's going to ask parents each day to certify two things. Number one, that their child is symptom free of all of those multiple symptoms of COVID, and also that they have not been exposed to a positive case. So parents will be expected first and foremost to certify that their child is healthy to come into the building. And then also something that's going to look quite different is that if your child then throughout the school day presents with one symptom, any symptom of COVID-19, then they will be sent home. They will be asked to go home. And again, this is a directive straight from the Illinois Department of Public Health. And if they develop one symptom at school, they will be sent home and all of their siblings will be sent home until you can go and get them tested and then there's a negative test, or until you take them to the doctor and the doctor says, you know, no, they don't need to be tested for COVID. This could be an alternative diagnosis of strep throat or whatever. But most doctor's offices, most pediatricians are really following IDPH guidelines that say any symptom at all could be COVID. And you could have seasonal allergies and COVID. You could have strep throat and COVID. So, you know, just again, helping parents to understand this is not the school trying to be difficult. This is the school trying to follow the IDPH guidelines to keep everyone safe.
That's Unit 5 school nurse Susie Markham speaking with Ryan Denham. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.